Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, December 14, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo says the party's much-awaited resolutions for the just-ended annual conference are still being compiled and will be submitted to the presidium first before being made public.
When they are being compiled, we shall give them any time. I cannot tell the committee when to end them in. They are working on them. They are synthesizing them. They are putting them together.
A comprehensive market assessment of retail financial services in Zimbabwe shows that mobile money operators are now dominating the finance sector.
You cannot grow without banks, because banks know about intermediation. So stop tying the banks around their ankles. You need mobile money, yes, you absolutely do. But we've got to change our mindset in how we go about this.
And the family of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara says it is happy that he has received an award for fighting for rights of Zimbabweans.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo says the party's much-awaited resolutions for the just-ended annual conference are still being compiled and will be submitted to the presidium first before being made public. The resolutions are likely to determine who has the upper hand in the serious factional fights between two warring camps, one allegedly led by Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and its rival, the so-called Generation 40 or G40. Fronted by First Lady Grace Mugabe, it includes the Young Turks in the party. The G40 supporters tabled a resolution that would see a return to the old party constitution in which one of the seats was reserved for a woman. This, party insiders allege, is targeting Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa.
But in a counterpatch, the Mnangagwa camp says this time the women's quota must be reserved for a ZAPU cadre, since former Vice President Joyce Mujuru came from ZANU-PF. The Mnangagwa camp, backed by a faction of the war veterans, is also demanding that the post of political commissar held by Xavier Kasukwere, a stalwart of the G40 group, be reserved for a war veteran. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu reached Kayamoyo and asked him about the anticipated party resolutions.
When they are being compiled.
And when are they likely to be released?
They are being compiled. We shall give them any time.
No specific date?
No, I mean, I cannot tell the committee when to end them in. They are working on them. They are synthesizing them. They are putting them together. And they should be ready any time for the leadership. So I don't think it is fair to tell people that they should be in by tomorrow. The conference just ended yesterday.
Overall, are you happy with the proceedings at the just-ended conference?
Yes, it was a very successful conference. Yeah, it is resoundingly successful, I must say. Things went on well. There were no hiccups. There were no problems we encountered. Every delegate, I think, who left happy. So things went on according to the agenda, and then there wouldn't be a problem.
And some people, Ambassador, are saying there seem to be contradictions in the party, in that Mr. Mugabe was saying no to military interference, and then in some resolutions from the war veterans, for example, they were saying they wanted service chiefs to be even part of the Politburo.
I don't know about that. We are waiting resolutions at any time.
ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, spokesperson Obed Gutu of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Formation, led by Morgan Tsvangirai, says his party has been vindicated after President Robert Mugabe fingered the securicrats in his party's succession dispute.
We feel vindicated that finally President Mugabe himself has admitted openly that the securicrats, meaning the army, the police, and members of the intelligence services, the CIO, are actively involved in politics. It was actually a very revealing confession, if I may call it that, when he publicly admitted that the problem of factionalism that is bedeviling his own party, ZANU-PF, is also largely caused or being caused by the involvement of the securocrats and inactive politics. As listeners would agree with me, the Constitution of Zimbabwe is very clear, and it states that members of the securocracy, that is the police, the army, the intelligence services, and any other members of the security services, be they in the country or working outside the country in the various embassies of Zimbabwe abroad, should not be active politicians. So as the MDC, we are actually happy that finally the chickens have come home to roost.
But is it not ironic that whereas Mr. Mugabe was lambasting the securocrats for interfering in his party's internal politics, there was a resolution from some war veterans who are members of the same party saying that service chiefs should be seconded to the party's Politburo?
You can see that there's a serious disconnect between what Mugabe is saying and what he does, and what other arms or departments of his government are doing.
Spokesperson Obed Gutu of the MDCT speaking to Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
At the same time, ZANU-PF lawmaker for Gokwe Nembudzia, Justice Mayor Wajika Jena, who was arrested in Victoria Falls on Saturday, appeared in court today on charges of allegedly insulting First Lady Grace Mugabe and a fellow ZANU-PF member, Jimai Mduhuri. The controversial parliamentarian was released on $800 bail and will be back in court on January 5. His lawyer, Give Momu Viringi, told Studio 7. Wajika Jena, an ally of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, was arrested after Mduhuri made a report that he had insulted him and Mrs. Mugabe at the ZANU-PF conference in the resort town of Victoria Falls. He is denying the charges.
A comprehensive market assessment of retail financial services in Zimbabwe shows that mobile money operators are now dominating the financial sector. Banking activities appear to be on the decline due to workers' low income and high unemployment in Zimbabwe. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from the capital.
Key findings of the Making Access Possible diagnostic launched in the capital today shows that mobile money operators were the most trusted financial service providers, and mobile money subscriptions had shot up by 72% from 3 million in 2013 to 5.3 million in 2014. Banks, insurance companies, retirement funds, cooperatives and microfinance institutions were less trusted, and more people were resorting to non-formal methods of saving money or used such entities when they were only paying school fees. An official from one of the organizations which did the assessment, Henny Bester of the Center for Financial Regulation and Inclusion, or CENFRI, said there was need for banks to change their business model if they are to regain ground.
You cannot grow without banks, because banks know about intermediation. So stop tying the banks around their ankles. You need mobile money, yes, you absolutely do. But we've got to change our mindset in how we go about this.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa concurred, saying Zimbabwean banks must accept the change that has taken place in the economy and adapt to the prevailing situation.
They really have no idea how to handle the informals. They have no strategies. It has never happened to them. And as a result, unless they come up with strategies to supply this demand, you may well find that some of the banks will get into serious problems.
Government estimates that more than $3 billion is circulating in the informal sector. According to the survey, only 24% of the 7 million adults in Zimbabwe have bank accounts. Some Zimbabweans are complaining that banks are charging high interest rates and normally demand a lot of documents for one to open an account, and cited this as a reason they preferred mobile money services such as EcoCash and Telecash. One such resident is Simplex Manando, who tells Studio 7 that mobile money operators are flexible and hassle-free.
I think mobile money is fast and very convenient, in the sense that you keep your money in your account such that you have at least how you keep your funds.
Zimbabwe Cross-Border Traders Association Secretary General Augustine Tawanda also said though they are relying on mobile money operators, they are negotiating with the banks so that their members can be included in the formal banking system. He said mobile money operators' charges are higher than those set by conventional banks.
Right now, our members are getting taking services from the mobile money operators. This is a fact, but we have been discussing, like I've indicated, we've already started discussions with banks to put in place measures and also the products which support cross-border functionality.
Bester said, despite the huge trust that Zimbabweans have in mobile money operators, there was no deposit protection for individuals and no recourse for them. He also noted that the country does not have regulations governing their operations. The assessment done by the United Nations Capital Development Fund, Sanfri and Finmark Trust is aimed at assisting the government in identifying key priorities and opportunities to extend financial services to the unserved or underserved sectors of the economy. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Shefra Zamara, the wife of missing activist Itai Zamara, who won this year's Zimbabwe Human Rights Association or ZIMRIDES Overall Human Rights Defender of the Year Award, says she's humbled by the award, which is a recognition of her husband's human rights work. The award comes exactly 9 months after he was abducted in Glenview, Harare, by unknown assailants, and he is still missing. Shefra Zamara tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri that her family hopes one day Itai will come back home alive.
But at the same time, we said that Itai Zamara is still missing. But we really appreciate the award.
The award came exactly 9 months after Mr. Zamara was abducted. How do you feel about this?
We feel very sad that Itai Zamara is still missing. But we still have hope that one day God will answer our prayers. We still have hope that we are going to see Itai one day.
This is the festive season. Christmas is just 2 weeks around the corner. What are you doing to prepare for Christmas without Mr. Zamara?
This year we are not celebrating Christmas because Itai is still missing. We don't know where, you know, what happened or what is happening. So there's no Christmas for us, Zamara.
Some organizations and individuals were helping you with food. Are you still getting this?
For the past 3 months, we are not getting anything. I think people are now tired.
Shefra Zamara is the wife of missing activist Itai Zamara. She spoke there with Jonga Kandemiri.
The revived ZAPU Party, led by Dumiso Dabengwa, says it has cancelled its second national congress, which was due to start tomorrow and end Thursday, due to failure to raise enough money to host the event. Our correspondent Taurai Shaba has more.
ZAPU Southern Region spokesperson Ipitule Maposa told Studio 7 that the party has deferred the Congress to a date to be announced next year after its National Executive Council made a negative report about preparations for the event. Maposa said the main reason for the postponement of the Congress was lack of adequate funding. He said the party had required about $200,000 to host a minimum of 3,000 delegates, which are required to form a quorum for a congress as per the party's constitution. Maposa said a policy consultative meeting will now be held on Thursday. He denied that the party's failure to hold the congress shows that it is not vibrant and lacks adequate numbers to be considered as a serious political party, blaming the failure to raise funds on the economic crisis, which he said has been brought by ZANU-PF government's misrule.
We have an economy that is close to dying. It's a sinking economy. The people have no money.
The Congress was supposed to be the second after the one held in 2010 following the revival of the party. Maposa said ZAPU relies only on funding from contributions by its members and could not be compared to the ruling ZANU-PF party, which recently held its annual conference in the resort town of Victoria Falls.
I may not say much about the ruling party, but we all know it's an open secret that they rely on the business sector, which sometimes they force the business people to fund their programs.
ZAPO was revived by some members who were frustrated to remain as part of ZANU-PF after the signing of a unity accord in 1987 between the late Joshua Nkomo, representing ZAPU, and President Robert Mugabe, representing the ruling party. The party has in the past approached the courts seeking to have some of its properties, including office buildings and farms held by the government, returned to it, but to no avail. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shava.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, Zimbabwe is hailing the climate change agreement reached in Paris at the weekend as a potential turning point for the world.
But first, Marvelous, we take a look at regional and international news.
Voting on a new constitution for the Central African Republic stretched into a second day Monday, a day after deadly violence disrupted polling in some areas.
Nigerian army troops shot and killed members of a Shiite Muslim group during the weekend after the group allegedly attacked the convoy of Nigeria's army chief.
And Egypt issued a preliminary report today saying its investigators have found no evidence of terrorism on the October 31st crash of a Russian plane in the Sinai Peninsula that killed 224 people.
With Zimbabwe still celebrating its successful hosting of the 18th International Conference on AIDS and STIs in Africa, or ICASA, the Health Ministry says it is not looking back as it tries to reach the goal of eliminating the mother-to-child HIV transmission, as has been achieved by Cuba, among other issues, including reaching the ambitious 1990 treatment target by 2020. Reaching this target would see 90% of people living with HIV knowing their HIV status, 90% of people who know their HIV-positive status accessing treatment, and 90% of people on treatment having suppressed viral loads. This will also reduce new HIV infections by 75%. We spoke with Dr. Angela Mushavi, the National PMTCT and Pediatric HIV Care and Treatment Coordinator in the Ministry of Health, who says prevention is what she and the department are concentrating on.
There were a lot of rich discussions that occurred during ICASA. Certainly, as always, I like to focus on prevention, where if you look at children, we are really looking to eliminating new HIV infections among children. And that means, you know, for women who are HIV positive, giving them lifelong treatment, first of all, for their own health and preventing new HIV infections to children. Then, of course, the issues around treatment, I think it was very much highlighted that pediatric antiretroviral treatment, including for young people and adolescents, is lacking behind, and that we need to be tackling some of those issues.
In terms of the financing in itself, to make sure that you are up to scratch in terms of making sure that you deal with this pediatric HIV/AIDS issue, how are you doing in terms of resources?
I can say, look, we have, during ICASA, showcased the innovative domestic financing, which is the AIDS levy, that has been given over to treatment and procurement of antiretroviral drugs, as well as, of course, other commodities and HIV prevention activities. But that's not nearly enough. And so we find that we do have to resource mobilize and work with development partners and funders such as the Global Fund to support some of the resources that we need to close the pediatric treatment gap.
What were the major highlights for you and your office in terms of what you have been doing before and what gaps could need to be closed?
I think one of the key highlights, if I can say so, was that, you know, Cuba became the first country to be validated as having attained elimination of mother-to-child transmission of HIV and congenital syphilis. And so for me, that's a big highlight because it's focusing on prevention to children. And then, of course, the WHO 2015 guidelines that are coming and the emphasis on testing, and if somebody tests HIV positive, on treating them without waiting for them to be sick or to have a low CD4 count. And I think that's a major paradigm shift from the current trust we have on determining someone's CD4 count and then treating depending on whether the CD4 count was low or less than 500. So it's going to be different. It's going to be a test and a positive start treatment right away. And that's a big take-home for me.
Now, turning our attention to prisons, what are you doing in terms of making sure that those in prisons also have, you know, as much assistance in terms of, you know, having the medication and all that is required if they are HIV positive?
I think the services are taken to inmates, but I don't want to comment in detail because I would refer, I think, to work that's being done by the National AIDS Council around prisons. I think they would have a lot more detail. But otherwise, services are taken also to inmates. And we have actually tried also with the training, because as you know, the prison services got healthcare workers, whether they are nurses or doctors, and they are also trained to manage HIV-related problems and to give antiretroviral treatment.
And in terms of your goals, you know, as the head of this crucial department within the Ministry of Health, what are your goals going into 2016?
I think the goal is very clear. We have set targets, you know, for HIV prevention, care and treatment. We have bought into the UNAIDS 90-90-90, and this is essentially saying by 2020, 90% of people who are HIV positive have been tested. That means increasing testing. And 90% of those who are positive are initiated on treatment. And then, of course, lastly, 90% of those on treatment have got viral load suppression. So I think that's the vision we have as a ministry, to also move in with the 90-90-90 by 2020 and then ending AIDS by the year 2030. That's the vision we have.
Dr. Angela Mushavi is the National PMTCT and Pediatric HIV Care and Treatment Coordinator in the Ministry of Health. She spoke with us from Harare.
Zimbabwe is hailing the climate change agreement reached in Paris at the weekend as a potential turning point for the world, especially struggling developing countries that have been feeling the pain caused by changing weather patterns. Under the deal, all nations will communicate their climate targets every 5 years, starting in 2020. The agreement sets up a transparency system where countries will not only disclose carbon emissions, but the source of those emissions and what nations are doing to mitigate greenhouse gases. Permanent Secretary Prince Mupajiriwo of the Environment, Water and Climate Ministry tells Studio 7 negotiations were painstaking.
This is as a result of protracted negotiations. We spent quite a number of nights without going to bed. This was because we wanted to find common ground. We wanted to find solutions. So, yes, we are very optimistic in relation to the reduction of the emission percentage to 1.5. We also believe that as countries start implementing those issues which are found in the agreement, it would go a long way in reducing or in addressing the issue of climate change.
What still needs to be done?
The areas where we are still not happy is to do with funding, financing, especially as it relates to the issues of losses and damages. You know, we are not developed countries, but we are suffering from climate change. This is as a result of those countries which have already developed. So we can't use the same development mechanisms which polluted the climate to be where we are today. We can't continue using them. But if we stop using them, they are cheaper. They are the ones which we can use where we have got the resources. And who should compensate that? It is those who have already damaged the environment. So these are the sticking points which we still need to address.
That was Prince Mupajiriwo, the Permanent Secretary of the Environment and Water and Climate Ministry. He spoke with Studio 7 from Harare.
Breaking news that we have marvelous from Harare. According to the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation, the Mashonaland West Provincial Coordinating Committee has recommended that War Veterans Minister Chris Mutsangwa be expelled from the party. The state broadcaster reports that this announcement was made by Provincial Chairperson Keith Guja. Mr. Mutsangwa is believed to be backing Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa in the highly contested succession debate over Mr. Mugabe, who is 91 and turns 92 next year. We will bring you more on this story tomorrow. Thank you, and so stay tuned.
And in sports news, the Highlanders football family is still celebrating their Easy Call Cup win as chicken in cry foul. Our reporter Michael Cariati tells us why.
Celebrations continue in the home of Highlanders after Boso clinched the 2015 Easy Call Cup with a 1-0 victory over neighbours Chicken Inn. But the Gamecocks are crying foul, claiming referee Brighton Chimene robbed them of a double, with coach Joey Antipas alleging that the penalty which won Boso the game was dubious.
That should never have been a penalty. It's unfortunate that we lost out to a dubious penalty.
The Blue Giants won the game 1-0 through a penalty conversion from Ralph Matema in the 40th minute. This was a good way for Boso to finish a season in which they struggled all the way and finished a distant sixth in the 16-team Kasolanga Premier Soccer League Assembly. Highlanders technical advisor Cosmas Zulu says the trophy is a Christmas present to their supporters.
We wanted to give this gift to our supporters. These are the owners of the team. It's not about us. We are inspired by Highlanders supporting. You see, they don't get paid for supporting the team. They support it from their hearts.
Zulu, who is the Highlanders technical advisor, says it has been good working with Amin Soma, whom we coached during the great, good old days of the 90s.
A lot of people who didn't believe in us are people who don't really know our history. You know, with me, with Amin Soma, I coach the boy, and he comes and works with me. We are winners.
Highlanders were missing the services of veteran striker Obedata Rumbwa and defender Eric Mzingwa, who were suspended for the game, but soccer star of the finalist Nox Mtizwa said football is all about being a team game.
Even if Obata is not around, we will play as a team. We said Papa is not around, Eric is not around. Let's fight, guys. Let's fight for them. They are the ones who managed to win the game and stand up in the final.
For their effort, Chicken Inn received 50,000. This gives them a total of 150,000 in a season in which they also received $100,000 for winning the Kasolaga Premier Soccer League Championship. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Today, our host will be talking with you, listeners and experts, about the just-ended ZANU-PF conference.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios.
hella in the newsroom. People are celebrating because Iboso has won finally. So that's the music of Nqobile Malinga going out to you from Studio 7 singing Highlanders. Marvelous. Now we recap today's top stories.
ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo says the party's much-awaited resolutions for the just-ended annual conference are still being compiled and will be submitted to the presidium first before being made public.
And that's what we had for you tonight. Just for the record, I remain a Dimbari supporter. Good night, Zimbabwe.
I'm Marvelous Mflanganya, who is saying good night.